Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to the weekly Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brown, on this Tuesday morning in Los Angeles here, shortly after the end of Manchester United's tour. I was out in Las Vegas and got back on Monday. Had an amazing weekend. Got to, of course, go to the United Dortmund game. The night before, I was at the Earl Spence Terence Crawford fight. Anyone who's a boxing fan will know that I witnessed a clinic. Absolutely unbelievable experience to go to that fight. So I had an all around good weekend, except the result of the Dortmund game. Another reminder, by the way, in Vegas that I'm 46, not 26. Anyone that would have been within 5 feet of me by Sunday would have been getting a contact high. It was a great weekend, great to see a lot of people out there. Some people I met for the first time. So if you listen to this podcast, just some of the people I met for the first time that we have communicated online through Twitter or other platforms, other means, and through the United community. It was great to see you. Great to meet you. And thanks to all the people that said hello inside the stadium. Met some new wonderful people. One other caveat about Vegas: if you haven't been and you're thinking about going, it is an overpriced hole. I used to love going when I was younger. It was affordable, but the corporatization of Las Vegas means it's just so disgracefully overpriced. The price gouging is an absolute disgrace. It really is. It's despicable. I'll give you an example. I went down to the gift shop to buy two bottles of water, two sandwiches, which, by the way, look like they were made with cement, and two bottles of water. You know what that came to? The equivalent of £50. Now, I don't mind paying a bit of a premium, but that's obscene. Every single thing inside that casino, the MGM Grand, was disgracefully marked up. I went to the Spence Crawford fight. I bought two beers. Came to what would be a £40 for two beers. Shite beer, by the way. Absolutely disgraceful. And honestly, I feel sorry for people. Vegas used to be an amazing experience. Used to be, we'd get rooms for relatively cheap. I remember going out there 20 years ago. You'd get rooms for relatively cheap, and things inside the casino were reasonably priced. You paid a bit of a premium, but not like you do now. And it's becoming less and less enjoyable. To be honest, I really only go out there unless there's a fight or for a reason to go out there. Otherwise, don't be going, because honestly, it is so disgracefully overpriced that by the time you leave there, you check your bank account and realize you've spent an absolute fortune on nothing. But anyway, other than that, the whole tour was a good experience. Had a really, really good time. Talk a little bit about, obviously, some of the things that happened, pros, cons, ups, downs. Talk a little bit about what United were saying on the tour about what would be done this summer in terms of signings. Obviously, players will leave, or I'll mention what I think is going to happen with Mason Greenwood. United have announced that they're going to obviously make a decision before the end of the season. They told me that 2 weeks ago when I asked them about it. To be fair, they've been quite evasive on what they're actually going to do. But they did say they had to make a decision before the start of the season. So we'll mention what I think is going to happen there. I'll talk a little bit about the Onana bollocking of Harry Maguire. We'll talk a little bit about, of course, Hoyland coming in, and the other signings as well. And I want to mention something that Richard Arnold was mentioning to a fan forum the other day about they can't communicate with fans. They give sensitive financial information and one or two other things. First of all, my thoughts on the Dortmund game. My thoughts on preseason are always the same. I think preseason, I'm not saying results are meaningless. They're always an indication of where you're at. Whether you can win the season with optimism, it's not always a good idea to go into the season having lost your preseason games. But I don't know if Ten Hag was prioritizing results in those preseason games rather than individual performances. You could see the way he was picking those teams, that maybe the least thing of importance to him was the results. Now, the mistakes that led up to United losing those games obviously bothered him more than losing the games itself. They conceded two really stupid goals against Dortmund. that were individual errors in defence, but by two defenders who I don't think would be starting. I thought Brandon Williams was a fault for the first one he dived in, didn't stay on his feet. And of course, Victor Lindelof got caught playing out from the back. So I'd be more concerned if that was coming from the back four that I think will start. I don't think that the team that played the last half an hour was that great. And that would be more of United starting 11. And Ten Hag was rightfully scathing after it. Again, he was more scathing about their application, about one of the things they can't do is start slow. So you have to get it right now. You can still lose the game playing well. You can still lose the game doing all the right things. Applying pressure, applying what you're doing in training into a game and making sure you take the game serious. Heat wouldn't have been an excuse because that was an enclosed stadium, air conditioned much like the stadiums in Qatar. It was nowhere near as hot on the inside as it was on the outside. Vegas was baking. I'm a bit disappointed the fact that United lost that game, to be honest. They shouldn't have lost it. Again, you see in the Real Madrid game, you saw it in the game against Dortmund, one of the major problems United have, which I think Haaland will help solve, is the fact that they didn't have a central striker. They missed some really, really good chances in that game. Antony missed some good chances. A couple of other decent chances that were missed. Positive was, I thought Jadon Sancho was exceptional. Really, really sharp. He looked excellent on the ball. He's got a really nice balance to him, his feet. And I think his confidence and his fitness, he's benefited from this tour. He's benefited from playing down the middle. And of course, it's against Borussia Dortmund, so he maybe feels like he has a bit of a point to prove to them. But he was definitely a positive. I thought he played really, really well. And of course, you can't fail to be encouraged by Onana. Plays really high. Even Tom Heaton in the first half was playing really high. You might not have seen it with the cameras constantly off him when United were attacking. But very, very rarely was Tom Heaton inside his own box when United were attacking. And when Onana starts attacks really quickly. You could see when Rashford came on, they were trying to find Rashford down the wings, they're trying to break quickly. And he was finding Rashford perfectly. Some of his crossfield balls were magnificent. Really, really top class. Very, very encouraged by him. And, I know that was made of the Harry Maguire bollocking, but I'll tell you what that says to me. And we've seen this before from all leaders at United. Roy Keane wasn't shy giving a bollocking to people. Peter Schmeichel certainly wasn't shy about doing that. It's an indication of Onana applying standards to what essentially was the club captain up until about 2 weeks ago and saying, I'm not going to feel my way in here. I have the courage to start ball chewing people right away and setting high standards. And you need players on the pitch that maintain those high standards. United have always had players that when they go on the field, they maintain those standards that the manager said. I mean, how many times have we heard stories of Roy Keane personally challenging players in training, personally challenging players on the pitch? Never forget when Dwight York came to the club, Roy Keane smacks a ball at him, bounces off him, and the first thing he says, and this was his first training session, at United, we control that. There's loads of stories like that. So it's very encouraging that even if it's a pre-season friendly, the certain players are demanding high standards of everyone. In Maguire's defence, something that I really don't like, the fact he was booed. And this is something that maybe fans that are new to United, that are not in touch with some of the broader aspects of United fan culture, may not be aware of. But United fans don't boo their own players. And it's getting a bit ridiculous. Now, we all know, I've covered Maguire ad nauseum on this podcast. I've said my piece. There's nothing else I can say about Harry Maguire. And I really don't think he should stay at the football club for all parties. I think for him, I mean, this must be a horrendous experience. And the, when they're announcing the team, his name gets read out, there's boos, there's people around me shouting, all sorts of profanities. And it irritated me, I'll be honest. There was a guy behind me, I'm not going to repeat on this podcast the things that he said, but some of them were, vile, I'll be honest. And I had my media press pass on, so I didn't want to turn around and get in an argument with him. But I was tempted to numerous times to turn around and tell him, my language is shut the fuck up. We can criticize Maguire, right? That's fine. But let's make sure we're measured with our words. Booing him on the pitch, that's totally unacceptable to me. I think that's a line United fans should never cross. He's representing the football club, he's representing the shirt. Leave the criticism the after. We support our players on the pitch. And I can't think of another example. Maybe someone will be able to point this out to me, where United fans have booed their own player. And there's been some really despicable things done by United players where maybe they deserve that. I mean, even when Ronaldo came back in his first game after spending the whole summer trying to agitate for a move to Real Madrid, he was treated like a hero. Even Wayne Rooney, when he was asking away and questioning the club's ambition, wasn't booed. And I can think of countless examples of United players that have been backed by the fans when they've had issues with the club even, or when players are out of form. United have had some bad players over the years. I mean, I don't even remember Baby getting booed. You know, so I just think there's a line, and as you know, the fans aren't always right. And if you're listening to this and you're relatively new to United fan support culture, I would ask you to not boo Maguire. And if you have friends that are relatively new to United fan culture, hopefully you can impress that upon them too, because this is something that really you wouldn't see at Old Trafford. I know there's been anxiety about Maguire. I know there's been, you know, groans about Maguire at Old Trafford. Maybe some recently it's been something that started to creep in. But it's not something that has been consistent with United's history. And I think it goes too far. And I think I actually started to feel sorry for him a bit in that game, because at the end of the day, he's a human being. And I think you can criticise his performances after the game, fine. But to boo him through a game, I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me. Hopefully, for Maguire's sake, he leaves the football club. I think it's the right thing to do for everybody. And I think for him, it'll probably be a relief to go play for fans that support him at a football club where he's not tarnished by the memory of previous eras. There's certain people that were contaminated by previous years, and no matter how well they played, they were never going to be able to emerge from that. Marouane Fellaini was one of these players. Consistently, you consistently tainted by the Moyes era, and was never able to fully emerge from that, and eventually had to leave the football club. Maybe if he'd have joined a year after, he'd have had a different appreciation. Because one thing about Fellaini, the managers that had him loved him. Van Gaal loved him. Moyes loved him. Mourinho loved him. Right, so but United fans never really took to him because he was a relic from not just the Moyes era, but of course Woodward's first season where it was calamitous. And I think Maguire's in that territory. I mean, there was a stat where United conceded one goal in 12 games towards the end of the season when Maguire played. The problem is for Maguire, he's remembered more for the bad performances. And all it's going to take is one bad performance for that muscle memory to kick in and to forget the other 12 positive experiences. And I just think for him, it's too difficult to emerge from that. United need the money, of course. I really do hope for his sake that he moves on. We'll see what happens. But all in all, I would say the tour was average. Some of the other disappointing aspects, of course, were the injuries to Kaby Mainoo and Ahmad Traore. Kaby's looks a bit worse than Ahmad. I think Ahmad should be back, but he really could have used these games. And I've seen this happen with players before. Van de Beek's another example of this, where every time they get an opportunity, they're a bit unfortunate with an injury. And the opportunity passes them by. It doesn't come again. It's going to be very difficult for Ahmad to force his way into the United team that's playing well if they start the season well. The only way he's going to get into the United team now is if United start the season badly and players are out of form, which I really hope doesn't happen. It's very difficult for him to force his way into a team that's playing well. So perhaps United might look to loan him out again. And I see a similar situation to Palestri, you know, who was really, really good on tour. Andy Mitten interviewed him on the United We Stand podcast about 2 weeks ago. in New Jersey, I believe it was, and he had said that Ten Hag had recommended he go out on loan. Again, he impressed me a lot in this preseason, and he's probably closer to United's first team than at any other time. Maybe it would be better to do a 6-month loan and review it 6 months from now. I definitely think he would benefit from another year out on loan. He's also, to me, not far off the first team. But Ahmad is sort of, he needed this preseason, in my opinion, to really impress Ten Hag, and he's been unfortunate. Kobbie Mainoo, you know, I think he's in a different territory. He's a very, very talented young boy. He was exceptional against Arsenal, very unlucky with his injury, of course. Against Real Madrid, after 5 minutes, he would have benefited immensely from playing against Real Madrid, pre-season or not. We would have loved to have seen him up against that type of quality. And had he have pressed in that game, I think for Ten Hag, you know, it would have been, it would have forced his way really into Ten Hag's thoughts. You know, people say, but experience, you need experience, but not all experience is good experience. There's lots of players that have accumulated really bad experiences. I hate to do this again, but I'll bring up Maguire. When you think about the experience that Maguire's accumulated over the last 3 years, is any of that beneficial? That will have brought a hesitancy to his game and nervousness to his game because of that negative experience. So not all experience is good experience. And sometimes when you get a young player that isn't tainted by negative experiences, that hasn't brought that nervousness into his game yet, you have got a lot more potential. I think there's an old proverb that says, an inexperienced mind has many potentials. An experienced mind has few. So there you are. This is your Seneca, your free philosophy on this podcast. Man of many talents. This is one of the benefits of getting stoned, is that you listen to stuff like this. I hope I'm remembering that correctly. But anyway, the point is the same. I think with young Cabby, he had an exceptional preseason up until his injury, and it was very, very unlucky for him to get injured. He got injured, of course, last season too. So hopefully he is back relatively soon, because I think if United move a couple of midfielders on, which they expect to do, Fred being one of them, obviously, Scott McTominay being another, bringing in decent money, he has a real chance. If they sell those players, which I expect they will, obviously Amrabat is high up on United's list. The word in the US from people at United was that 4 players were going to be coming this summer. So I'd be surprised if anyone was brought in after Amrabat. It's possible they meant 4 minimum. But I think they expect to bring Amrabat in. They do expect, obviously, to sell some other players that are not going to play. To be fair, McTominay's had a decent preseason. Better than some of the players that are going to be kept, but with Scott, you have to judge him on a much greater sample size. And the question is, will he, you know, once all those players are picked, find their form, which inevitably they will. Talking about world class players here, Casemiro's too good to not find his form. Mason Mount is obviously going to start. Very, very good player. Bruno, of course, it's hard to see where a player of Scott's age and an international profile player is going to get enough game time. So I think for him, it makes sense to move on. So especially knowing that United want Amrabat, and I'm not sure they want Scott McTominay. I think Amrabat would be a really, really good player for United. Really sensible. Then the question becomes, is Mount, Onana, Hoyland, Amrabat enough to catch City? I don't know. But what I would say is this. If I asked you, was it enough to catch Arsenal, what would you say? Arsenal were 8 points clear of City in April. So, whilst it may look like a massive gap, United played City 3 times last season. Beat them once. Lost twice. The second time they lost, the most recent, there wasn't much in that. 2-1, United hit the bar in the 92nd minute. Almost forced that into extra time. So, and if you look at the games won, drawn and lost, there wasn't a huge amount of difference between the two teams. Obviously, City have a goal scorer. That makes all the difference. United's goal output wasn't enough. If they can get the goal output up by another 20, 30 goals next season, and that's going to require two or three other players chipping in, which I think is a reasonable expectation when you've got Marcus Rashford on 400 grand a week, when you're paying 72 million for a young striker in Rasmus Højlund, and you've got 100 million winger, or 85, whatever you want to say, in Antony. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that front three to be chipping in with another 30 goals a season. Rashford, you can exonerate because he did that last season, but the rest have got to start doing that. You know, Veghorst came in for the last 6 months of the season, didn't score a Premier League goal. There's your difference. Højlund obviously can't do that. Højlund is going to, whether we like it or not, have huge expectation placed upon his shoulders. This, I don't like United fans doing this, comparing him to Haaland, which is a really lazy comparison. I mean, why is he being compared to Haaland? Because he's a Scandinavian, young, blonde kid. I mean, other than that, I can't see any similarities. Very good young striker, but raw. He's going to take time. He's going to need time to settle in. And you may be looking at a similar Darwin Nunez type season where he scores 10, 11 goals. But then that's going to mean that Antony's going to have to up his consistency next season. I think we should expect more from Antony next season. I think that's reasonable. I think we should expect more goals from him next season, more assists next season, because there's now a central striker. I think Rashford will also play central. Obviously, Garnacho will play quite a bit on the left as well. I think we'll get plenty from Garnacho in terms of goals and assists. I think they'll be all help. The front line will have Mason Mount behind them. So I'm expecting United to be significantly better in front of the goal next season. Which then, of course, brings me to Ten Hag and expectations, considering the money that's been spent. And of course, rival fans are always going to shit on their signings. That's just normal, right? But they're rightfully pointing out the money that Ten Hag has spent, which he spent quite a bit. And I don't think it's unreasonable or unfair to now say to Erik ten Hag, okay, these are the players you picked. They're clearly all his signings. So, and I kind of agree with what Ralph Brannick said. He said, you don't need 3 years to catch Liverpool or to catch City. It can be done right if you pick the right players who want to play the way you want to play. None of the players that Ten Hag has at his disposal right now have been foisted upon him. They're not agent-driven signings. These are clearly signings that he wanted. I mean, Amrabat is also one of his ex-players. So, you know, most of these players he knows inside out. So Højlund signed with his agency, you know, before the summer. Clearly a player that Ten Hag targeted and wanted. These are players that he wanted. So I think it's reasonable to now say you have to improve on last season. If United finished the season in third, winning the Carabao Cup next season, I would say that's a failure. It's not a failure this season, but next year, absolutely. If United don't get to quarterfinals of the Champions League, I would say that's a failure. I mean, there aren't many clubs in the world, managers around the world, getting 400 million circa around that number to spend. You know, I mean, I don't know if that hits a nail on the head accurately. I'm having the time to really research that number, but he's what, 100 million on Antony, 55 on Martinez, you know, 60 on Mount, there's 210, so 60, 65, 12 on Malacia, 30, you know, so about 350, not far off. I think it's reasonable. Because I would certainly demand this of anyone else if they were given that money, to say, hey, we have to continue to make progress for that to be justifiable. I trust Ten Hag 100%. I think he's the best manager United have had since Ferguson. You know, you saw it on this tour. His attention to detail was incredible. And I'm not just talking about the obvious stuff. I'm talking about the things you don't even think about. The distance between the mannequins on the pitch, the way United staff dressed, you know, it was like school. You know, everyone had to conform, had to behave a certain way, had to be on time. You know, there was, last minute dinners that were called instead of going out. Like, he is a strict disciplinarian. You know, obviously there has to be a balance. Players have to be allowed to breathe and enjoy themselves, and there's a yin and a yang to that. You can do too much of it. But I think Ten Hag has complete control of that football club in a way that no other manager has had since Ferguson. And you would have to say that United have backed them. I mean, they signed Mount, Hoyland, and Onana in the space of 25 days. Now, that's an efficiency that United fans have been crying out for from really even pre-Woodward. Constant sagas, you know, death by a thousand cuts every transfer window, you know, constantly drip-fed updates, changes, you know, and it takes any type of pleasure out of it. Because by the time you actually get the player over the line, you're so exhausted with the process that, you know, it makes it very difficult for any manager to work in that environment, because you don't know if you're going to get these signings, you don't know when you're going to get them. I mean, it's just very, very difficult. So I think he's been allowed to plan properly this summer by getting most of his signings done. Let's say United get Amrabat. That would mean 90% of Ten Hag's signings were done before the end of pre-season. That's a healthy ratio. There's not many managers who are able to work for a football club who does things like that. So I think, you know, if you look at Inter Milan getting to the Champions League final last season, or AC Milan getting to the Champions League semi-final, I don't think it's unreasonable to say to Ten Hag, you need to be in a Champions League quarter-final next season, bare minimum. He's not above criticism. You know, I think that if you could question maybe one decision that Ten Hag's made that I'm not 100% sure about, or it could be made differently, it would be the Antony signing. You know, but to be fair, you have to go back to when he made that signing, because you never had Ronaldo, obviously. And you're going, well, you know, most likely Ten Hag didn't think that the central striker situation was something that really could be addressed until the start of the summer. Sorry, my young lad just went to the background. Most likely Ten Hag thought the striking situation probably won't need to be addressed until the following summer because of Ronaldo's situation. It wasn't likely the United were going to get rid of Ronaldo last summer. So I think maybe you could excuse it. But if United had have got rid of Ronaldo last summer, to me, the only signing to make up front was a central striker. They could have got away with not signing another winger. But they've done that now. And, I'm excited to see what Hoyland brings to the football club. And United are desperately crying out for a number nine. But he even saw it in the Leeds game, you know, all the way throughout pre-season. It was blatantly obvious. You know, the problem you'd have down the centre, down the middle. Strikers cost the most of any player in world football. So is Hoyland worth the money? We won't know. We might not even know the answer to that question next season. You know, Darwin Nunez might turn out to be worth the money. He may not. But I don't think you can say either or right now. So we might not even get the answer to that question next season. So we'll see what happens, but one thing we can say with a high degree of certainty is that this is Eric Ten Hag's team, and it's been shaped in exactly the way he wants it. And I have to say, I support him 100% so far, and I really like the look of him as a manager. The other striking situation, of course, is Mason Greenwood. And as I said at the start of this podcast, United had said that they were going to make a decision before the end or the start of the season. And that was something they communicated to me, like I said, 2 weeks ago. Now, I did a podcast about a week or two on the Mason Greenwood situation and my thoughts on that. So I'm not going to get into that again. As I said, I wouldn't keep covering it. From what I understand, and please, if you're an aggregator account listening to this, don't tweet this out. I really would prefer this to be kept on the podcast. The football side do want Mason Greenwood back. I can't say that's 100% certain, but I've been told that maybe, so I want to be careful about that. But I've been told that that's the case. I think if United were going to get rid of him, they would have already. I do know for a fact that opinion inside the club was split there are certain people that think Mason should be moved on. There are certain people that think it's just a matter of time before something happens again. There are certain people who don't think that. There are certain people who think, you know, he's not going to be able to escape the tension and the pressure and everything. There's obviously people that have ethical issues, what have you. And this is exactly what you should expect. I don't think Adidas would be a huge problem. Look at how long it took Adidas to drop Kanye. So I clearly, they don't care. I mean, there's no ethical issue for them. They'd be asking the same question United are asking. Is it going to hurt us in sales? They just did a £1.1 billion deal with United to extend the contract on their kit. So clearly, the Mason Greenwood thing is not an issue. I would imagine Adidas wanted that announced before any announcement took place over Mason Greenwood. Because if Mason Greenwood had been announced before that, and then it was announced that Adidas did this deal, it would have given the impression that Adidas completely supported the Mason Greenwood announcement if United are going to announce that he's going to stay. And to me, all the indications are that they will announce he's going to stay. I've also talked about the legal aspect of this. Technically, he hasn't been convicted of a crime. I've asked a few people about the legalities of this, and they've told me it's very, very difficult to terminate an employee when technically they haven't been convicted of a crime. There would be grounds for unfair dismissal, and that could get messy. And, there's precedent and everything else. I mean, Johnny Evans is about to get an extension of a contract. Johnny Evans was accused of rape, 2006, I believe it was, pre-social media, really. And it doesn't get mentioned. I'm not saying, please understand, I'm not saying that that exonerates Mason Greenwood by any means. I'm just saying that if this was an issue for sponsors being accused, then I would imagine people like Johnny Evans would have a problem. As has been announced today, Johnny Evans is almost certainly going to have his contract extended. I think I talked about this on the podcast before, where I'd said I'd been told that there was a high likelihood that he was going to stay at United beyond the short-term deal. Look, he's someone that will give United cover in league games, league cup games, and lots of games we need to bring someone on. He has experience, he's a good player, he's clearly not going to start every week. Maybe that's another indication that United are going to sell Harry Maguire and really don't want to replace him, want to push that off to next season, which I think is more than fair. I don't know if that's certainly the case, but I think that probably is the case. So we will see what happens there. As I'm recording this, it's been somewhat confirmed that he's going to stay for a year, and I have nothing against that. I've met Johnny before, actually, really nice lad, and I'm happy to see him out at the football club, to be honest. So I think he is someone that will help United, help the dressing room, and I think it makes sense given his experience, and he's not a bad defender. So we will see what happens on that. Like I said, I don't expect much more after Amrabat. I think I would only depend on if there was maybe an unforeseen exit. I don't think it will do much more. I think given how much they use Tom Heaton in pre-season, it's probably an indication that they're quite happy with the Heaton Onana goalkeeping situation. So I know they were looking at that young Japanese keeper. Probably won't happen this window. And I know his club wanted to keep him until January. So I would imagine that he will stay there. I think they'd be desperate to do that deal anyway. So they obviously play Lawrence and Bilbao this weekend. Be interesting to see which teams he picks. Obviously, he's going to do similar to what they did with Wrexham. I would imagine he'd send the strongest team to play Bilbao. I wonder if, given the results that United have had, will affect how he picks these teams. Ten Hag will not want to go into the start of the season against Wolves, just over less than 2 weeks away. having lost to Bobby or lost to Lance. He's going to want that first team going into the game with a bit of confidence, intensity. And that's one thing, of course, that preseason will give players. Will give players confidence. So he's going to want to make sure you need to get a result in one of those games. So I would imagine he'd pick a really strong team against Bilbao, even though that game is in Ireland. It's small puddle hop 45 minutes away on a plane. I'd imagine he'll get much more of a mixture against Lance. He's done this a lot through preseason where he's played back-to-back games and split the two teams up. One thing that Ten Hag had demanded when he came to United was control over the under-23s, so that he had a direct influence on who was being picked, who was coming through. And I know Travis Binion took the most of the coaching, of course, against Wrexham, but you can see that Ten Hag is very involved with the under-23s and looking at the quality they'll have and looking at who can emerge. This is really, really important. Especially if you look at last season when you had a short, smaller squad, you need to have a really, really sharp awareness of what is beneath you in the under-23s, who's ready, who's not ready, because Ten Hag will trust his own opinion more than anyone else's, and I think this is really important. I remember when Van Gaal came in, he was asked about this, obviously considering, much like Ten Hag, he has a track record of bringing through young players, and he was asked about whether he would have any control or say over the academy and what have you. And he said, no, I was told that was not the case. It was only to work with the first team, which I think was a missed opportunity from United. So this, of course, Ten Hag has demanded control over, and that's a manager of a football club, not a football team. And that's really, really important. This is what I mean by it's Ten Hag's football club. He gets to control everything that's going on there. So, I think that's really, really important. So that there is continuity between the first team, the under-23s, the under-18s. And there's also some symmetry between how the teams play. So that if you take a player from the under-23s, put them in a first team, you're not having to adjust to a system, to adjust certain play, the way certain teams play. There's continuity between those teams, and that is really, really important. I mean, if you go through La Masia, I mean, Barcelona, those teams are playing exactly the same way at under 8 as they are at under 18. And that is something that is very important, because we've seen how difficult it is to bring players into a system that they don't fit. Doesn't matter how good they are. If your attributes don't align with the system you're being asked to play, it's going to be very difficult to excel and make it at that football club. So, again, something that Ranić was saying, you need to know exactly how you want to play, and then you build around that. You know, not a little bit pregnant, as he said, not a little bit like this. You have to define your style of play, and then, of course, send players at all levels based on that type of style. So that is somewhat encouraging that Ten Hag has, of course, got involved in that. I'm looking forward to seeing what the under-23s do next season and who he brings up. I think there's a couple of decent young players in that squad. And as I've said before, the success and how you define the success of a youth squad isn't by how good the team is, it's by how good the individuals are. Their job is to get a couple of players into the first team. And if they do that, successful age group. If not, you have a really good team, and none of those kids get into the first team, then how successful is that? So we shall see. But anyway, folks, I'm going to go ahead and leave it there. I'll be back again probably before the weekend or shortly after the Wolves game, the Lords and Bilbao game. I'll see what time I have. Thanks to all of you for your downloads, all your follows on Twitter, everything else, much appreciated. I'm extremely grateful for all the love. I hope your mental health and physical health as well. Everything's good on my end. And it's always good to record these podcasts and get the feedback from them. So I really appreciate all that. Take it easy. Much love to all your families.